The SEC is clearly drifting toward this sort of grand unified theory of risk disclosure, where the company has to think through how do we assess the risks that are material to our business.
That was Matt Kelly. This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to the award-winning Compliance Into the Weeds, the only podcast that takes a deep dive, literally going into the weeds, to tackle a compliance or compliance-related topic. Today, we take up the SEC climate reporting rules from the perspective of an integrated risk management approach for an organization. Who should oversee this risk management, which would, of course, include a risk assessment, a risk management strategy, education on that strategy, execution of that strategy, monitoring it, and improving it. It's a fascinating exploration of a way to look at climate reporting as a risk going forward. First, we're going to have a word from our sponsor, Ethoco.
Navigating the complexities of compliance data security and accessibility is a daunting task. Ethoco makes it effortless with real-time permissions control. This feature ensures that sensitive information is both secure and accessible while balancing confidentiality with efficiency. It's about creating a fortress around your data while keeping the gates flexible for those who need access. Discover a solution where security meets agility. Step into a world of controlled freedom with Ethoco. Learn about reshaping your data security at ethoco.com/CPN. Book a demo, download our white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance, and try our free ROI calculator to start a new chapter in ethics and compliance management.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back again with Matt Kelly for the award-winning Compliance Into the Weeds. Welcome back, Matt.
Hello, Tom. Always good to be here.
Matt, today we're going to take up the SEC climate change reporting rule that has had quite an interesting life over the past 10 days. You want to set the stage and tell our listeners what the SEC proposed and how it may have been different from what they had initially set out for comment.
Yeah, so they did at long last enact their climate change disclosure rule on March 6th, and it may feel like, in other news, hell has frozen over because we have been waiting for 2 years for this rule. It was back in 2022 that the SEC first unveiled its proposed climate risk disclosure rule. And you had to disclose two big things. You, number one, had to disclose the actual greenhouse gases that your company makes, your organization. And you also had to disclose your material climate risks. And I want to take each of those things in turn. But way back when, in 2022, the SEC had originally proposed that companies would need to disclose their scope one risks, which are gas emissions, which are gas emissions from your own company, your scope two emissions, which are those generated by the power you consume, and your scope three emissions are those carbon emissions caused by your supply chain up and downstream. So all the carbon emissions from getting all the stuff that you need from your suppliers to build whatever it is you build, and all the gas emissions from your products downstream after you sell your product to your consumers. Because, for example, if you are a car manufacturer, most of your greenhouse gas emissions are scope three. The emissions coming out of the tailpipe of the car are far greater than the emissions ever used to create the actual car. So that was the whole idea of the proposal. Then, 2 weeks ago, we get the actual rule. Well, scope three emissions, gone. Any greenhouse gas emissions at all for smaller reporting companies, gone. Larger companies still do need to disclose their greenhouse gas emissions for scope one themselves, scope two, the power they consume. They would need to start doing that 2 years from now, which means practically that you would need to measure and track your greenhouse gases in 2025 to include them in the annual report you will put out in 2026. This would coincide with California's greenhouse gas emissions rule, which is following on that same schedule, and the Europeans' greenhouse gas disclosure rule, which also comes live on 2026. So I can see why they had extended that. Several years down the road after that, starting I think it is in 2028, companies would need to start auditing their greenhouse gas disclosures. And then, Tom, on top of all of that, you still have to disclose, starting next year for pretty much all companies, what your material climate risks are. And a couple of years from now, larger companies would need to include a new footnote in their quarterly and annual reports about the costs of actual extreme weather events. So even though the greenhouse gas emissions part was scaled back a lot, it hasn't been scaled back a lot for a lot of big companies. There's still a lot of other stuff that has to go in here. We can talk about the litigation challenges against the rule already, which are numerous. But Tom, I still think one of the biggest issues here is just at a large company, who is in charge of doing this? And I had one fascinating conversation with the compliance officer about this rule where he called me up and he said, look, I don't know who is in charge of doing all this. Oh, crap. Does that mean it's me? Yeah, it means it's me, doesn't it? Damn it. That was the extent of his conversation with me. And I think that dawning realization is probably not uncommon among a lot of compliance officers right now.
Well, Matt, the framework for this is really not something that is new or different. In fact, you believe it was based on earlier work by the SEC, I believe in the cybersecurity area. If that's a fair characterization, how would you guide, or if a compliance officer came to you, could you point them to this prior guidance as at least a framework to think about?
Well, we should be careful with our vocabulary here. So for the greenhouse gas emissions you need to make, you do need to follow a specific framework called the, I think it is the Climate Change Task Force Financial Disclosures Framework, the TCFD, if I am remembering my acronyms correctly. It is a well-known framework now. I think it was originally developed in Europe to measure the financial impact of climate risks. And you are supposed to follow those sorts of frameworks to figure out what are the actual greenhouse gas emissions I'm making? What are the actual financial damages from, say, a weather event? How do I calculate all of that? So there are certain frameworks that are climate change specific that the company, whether that is the sustainability officer, a chief risk officer, an internal auditor, a compliance officer, whoever it is in charge, you will need to go look for those frameworks. But Tom, my other point that you alluded to there is that you also need to disclose your company's general approach to assessing climate risks. So it doesn't necessarily matter exactly what your climate risks are, and that doesn't have anything to do with your actual greenhouse gas emissions either. You could have very low greenhouse gas emissions, but if you are built somewhere in a hurricane zone, which is going to get increasingly battered by hurricanes, you have climate risks you need to think about, and you need to figure out how big are they. Are how often is this going to happen? Will it actually be material to my business if I run data centers or warehouses and I'm in a hurricane zone that is going to get pummeled year after year? Should that be something I disclose? And how would I figure out if it's material? But the companies must disclose, and I will quote here, this is what they said last week. Any processes the company has for identifying, assessing, and managing material climate-related risks. You need to disclose what your approach is to assessing this. Well, 1 year ago, when the SEC adopted its cybersecurity disclosure rule, they also said something very similar, where the company must, and I quote, describe the processes, if any, for assessing, identifying, and managing material risks arising from cybersecurity threats. So other than swapping in cybersecurity and climate, those sentences are essentially identical. You need to disclose how you go about assessing your material risks for X. X could be cyber, could be climate, could be something else, could be anti-corruption, could be supply chain disruptions, could be all sorts of stuff. But the SEC is clearly drifting toward this sort of grand unified theory of risk disclosure, where the company has to think through, how do we assess the risks that are material to our business? Who does it on the management side? Which committees of the board are in charge of overseeing what management is doing? What are we actually going to disclose? And all of that is getting more and more similar over time, even though the actual risks you're analyzing and disclosing, they can be radically different, like cyber and climate. But the oversight structure is kind of sort of the same, or at the least, you're going to have to talk about how it is the same or how it's different.
Doesn't that really fit into the SEC philosophy behind this, which is to give the investor not simply the information around what those assess might be, but also to lay out what your protocol is for making that assessment so the individual or institutional investor would have more information to make their own decision?
Yes, it is. And I think you could put it in a bit more of a pedestrian phrasing. I would say that, you know, they really want to let investors know what are the actual risks of the company and does management have its act together to be able to figure out what its risks are and then address them somehow. And, you know, you could look at this two ways. You could keep reinventing the risk management wheel. We need a whole structure for cyber. We need a whole structure for climate. We need a whole structure for anti-corruption. We need a whole structure for financial reporting, which companies have had for 20 years since Sarbanes-Oxley came along. You know, you might need another whole structure for supply chain risk. Well, that seems very duplicative to me. And I think the tension here is going to be how does the board assure that the company is doing this well, doing this wisely, and probably trying to come up with, like I said before, a grand unified theory of risk management. Does it always need to be so duplicative and siloed, or do you get a broader enterprise-wide sense of the risks so the management knows how to handle it all? And we should probably think through what are the implications of that for the board and how it governs risk management systems. In theory, that would all fall to the audit committee. In practice, the audit committee is already
overwhelmed. Typically, I would counsel a chief compliance officer to go down to hall and have a cup of coffee with the chief technology officer, with the head of internal audit, with the CFO.
A smart board would have a risk committee separate from the audit committee. And you would need to think on the inside, on the corporate in-house side, how are we structuring our risk oversight? Who does what? Does internal audit help? Do we have a risk management function? Does compliance do it all? Those are the kind of questions that arise from what's going on with the SEC here.
Matt, typically I would counsel a compliance officer that they need to go down the hall if you're actually working it from the office and talk to your CFO, talk to your CTO, talk to your head of HR, talk to your head of internal audit, talk to your head of environmental and safety. But here, I might suggest the board actually go down the hall and talk to the chief compliance officer and see if they could get a short course in the risk assessment process and see if that would lend itself to not only the climate reporting that the Department of Justice, the SEC has mandated, but as you said, a wide variety of other risks that every corporation has and investors are claiming for more information on. Would that be something you might suggest as well, or do you see it in a different manner?
Well, I think I like the part about maybe the board should go and march down the hall, but I'm not necessarily sure exactly who they should go down to. Because remember what I said a few minutes ago about my compliance officer friend who called me up and he basically said, "Who does this? Oh, crap, it's me." That's not going to be a good answer if the board wanders in to ask what's going on. You say, "Oh, crap, I guess I it's me." So I think the board and management need to sit down and think about who should be in charge of this. There are going to be an awful lot of corporate compliance officers who don't know anything about the company's environmental health and safety risks because historically they never have been in charge of that. But is EHS now going to be in charge of monitoring your climate risks? I think a lot of EHS people would say that's not what we do. We make sure that nobody's pouring like poison solvents out back behind the loading dock. So there may be some confusion about the roles and responsibilities here. And I wonder if these rapid fire disclosure rules from the SEC could maybe have companies take a pause, take a breath, and make sure that we have the right risk oversight structure so that the board can go down the hall to the right people at the right times. And I think ESG really crystallizes this. There are going to be also, I think, a lot of sustainability officers who may not necessarily know how to handle, say, disclosure of your greenhouse gas emissions. I mean, they know, they might know that they want to reduce greenhouse gases. They might know that they want to move to green energy, but I don't necessarily know that they are experts in actually measuring carbon emissions or extracting that information from key suppliers. So you'd need to start thinking that through. The rush job or the reinventing of the wheel for every new disclosure obligation that comes along, that's not going to do a company any favors over the long run. But we are where we are here. And it might actually be a good time for the risk assurance team, everybody in the second line of defense, to say, time out, we need to take a step and make sure that we are structuring risk oversight the right way and not just doing this in a knee-jerk responsive thing to the next whatever that the SEC throws over the transom.
You clipped out a little there, so you may have answered this question, but do you think this gives a board, senior management, or others in a corporation the opportunity to talk about a truly integrated, holistic approach to risk management in all of these areas, whether it be EHS, whether it be anti-bribery, anti-corruption, whether it be AML, whether it be data privacy, whether it be data protection, or the myriad of other risks that every corporation faces? Should a company start to have that discussion?
Well, yeah, they should. And I wouldn't even say this gives them the opportunity. This gives them the clear reason that they should be talking about this, because otherwise you will wind up with siloed approaches to risk management. We have been talking about that for years and the perils thereof. And it's not something the company should want to do. It's not the cost-effective way to do it. And it's not the reliable way to do it. You could wind up with conflicting answers. You could wind up with confused employees. You could wind up with business partners who say, these people don't have their act together. I'm going to go find a new business partner who can tell me what my third-party risks are of them, the company that doesn't have their risk management act together. So there's many different reasons why companies should really try to get a handle on this. And I think it would be a compelling argument to take to the board about this is why we need to take a stop and try and figure this all out so we can brief you, board, more effectively on what the risks are. So you, board, can be more confident as you assess our risk management controls and systems.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, we should note, I suppose, that for all of our talk about this climate change rule, it is, of course, now deep in litigation already. I think the law professors will have a field day with this, that various oil and gas interests have sued to stop the rule, and various environmental groups have sued the SEC to say the rule has not gone far enough and to put those Scope 3 requirements back in. As of Friday afternoon, the ever-conservative and ever-activist Fifth Circuit Appeals Court down in Texas did suspend these rules. But there are, at last count, I think 6 lawsuits, either for or against the SEC rule somehow, pending through federal court. It looks like they're all going to get consolidated, and then some lucky federal judge is going to win this case by lottery, and we'll get to hear it. You know, if it's a Trump judge, then I think we all know what's going to happen to this rule. But if it is a more sensible judge, then we could have a long period of litigation over what the SEC has done. Tom, we could speculate about what would happen if Joe Biden does get reelected and the SEC revisits this rule in a second Biden term, which I think they would do if they can, and probably put Scope 3 back in then. On the other hand, if Donald Trump wins, you can kiss this rule goodbye with whoever me might have run the SEC. On the third hand, we still have those climate rules from California and Europe that are rolling right along, and nobody's going to be able to stop those in Washington. So there is still a very clear need to care about climate change disclosures at your company, no matter what wacky stuff Washington is doing these days.
Well, I think on the wacky stuff, we should conclude this podcast, Matt. I can't wait to see what we come up with for next week. This is Tom Fox again. As I mentioned at the start of this podcast, our sponsor for the Compliance Podcast Network this month is Ethoco. Have you ever struggled with the ROI of your compliance program? Have you struggled with how to present your compliance program budget request to your chief financial officer? Well, I paired with Ethoco to help you in both of those. Ethoco has created an ROI compliance calculator, and I've written a white paper on the ROI of compliance. You can get those by going to the website listed on the show notes. I hope you will check it out. I hope you will use it, and I hope you will let us know whether it helped you or not. I'd like to tell you about the newest addition to the Compliance Podcast Network, the Compliance Tip of the Day. In this, I give a quick 5-minute tip of the day that you can use for your compliance program going forward. Check it out on the Compliance Podcast Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.